Members of the committee, I'd like to call the meeting of Senate Hess to order for April 9th, and it is 9:04. I'd like to recognize Senator Ward, Senator Lehman, Senator Green, and myself, Senator Wilton, are present today. The purpose of today's meeting is we need to do a little housekeeping in regard to our confirmation hearings on last Monday. We'll then take up House Bill 145 dealing with teacher competency. We will then go to a presentation of Senate Bill 146. And for those people in the room with copies of the bill and the packet are over on this table for those that would like them. And then if there's time left, and there should be, we will bring back to the table Senate Bill 96 regarding hospice care as it relates to what we talked about on Monday. And that's the order of business. We have on the teleconference network seven sites. We want to welcome this morning Anchorage, Fairbanks, Barrow, Glen Allen, Juneau, Tok, and Valdez. So far, we don't have anyone signed up to testify. I would also let the committee know, and also those in the room and on the teleconference network, that we will not be considering Senate Bill 142 today, having to do with REAAs. That's been pulled from the agenda. So let's see. I'd like to welcome Senator Ellis. Good morning. A little housekeeping first. On Monday, we had confirmation hearings. I have here the letters that I need each of you to sign. So if we start, sign those, and we'll pass those on to the Senate Secretary, letting them know that we've had confirmation. Any comments about those have been so recorded. Anything else from the committee that we need to cover here this morning before we begin? See nothing. Let's welcome Representative Bundy to the table, and let's take up House Bill 145. Morning, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, committee members. For the record, I am Representative Con Bundy, District 18, and we have House Bill 145. My thanks to you for scheduling the bill. It's a bill I think is certainly a win-win. We realize, of course, that the importance of having highly qualified teachers in the state of Alaska. And as it exists today, while I don't wish to cast any aspersions on any particular teacher, the only qualification to receive a Type A teaching certificate in the state of Alaska is to have a college degree in the area of education. Sure, all of us who have attended college classes realize that just having a college degree sometimes does not a teacher make. And this is an effort that's part of organized House effort to try to instill further confidence in our educational system. It would require that teachers take a basic competency test before they're issued a license in the state of Alaska. I have every confidence that the majority of the applicants would pass this test quite handily. Certainly, those people who graduate from the University of Alaska system in education already do take a screening test before they can even get into the program. However, we still do hire about 50% of our teachers from the lower 48, and we have no system of quality control for the people who do come to us from the lower 48. This is a test much like it exists in 40 other states. Again, it's merely the first level of screening. It helps instill confidence at the local school board that they are looking at applicants that are highly qualified. And then it's incumbent upon the local school board that they, through their interview process, make decisions among this highly qualified applicant pool as to which teachers will meet their specific requirements and will blend best with their district. So it isn't taking away the responsibility of the local school board, simply trying to, as I said earlier, elevate the level of confidence in the general public that we are hiring the best of the best. And with that, I'd be happy to address questions.
Thank you, Representative Bundy. Questions of the bill sponsor? Senator Lehman?
Chairman, Representative Bundy, I don't disagree with your initial statement. This is just graduating with a baccalaureate degree doesn't make a good teacher. But I guess I'd extend that and say just passing a competency exam doesn't either. And it may make us feel good, or it may give us a little bit more comfort, and it, on balance, it probably is a good thing to do. But I'm concerned that somehow we might begin thinking that because somebody has passed that exam, or for that matter, because somebody is certificated, they're a good teacher. You know, I think we need to be careful that we don't slip into that mode, because I know people who are certificated who aren't good teachers. And I know some who aren't certificated who are. And, you know, just that doesn't do it. And I read Fred Dyson's article on this, and I agree with a lot of what Fred is saying, but there's an underlying concern about the quality of education, and I know you're concerned about it too, and believe that this is a step to help improve that. But how would you respond? And I assume you've read and talked with Fred about it. And how would you respond to something like that when we're essentially saying we're either attacking a non-existent problem, or we're going about it perhaps in the wrong way?
I have read the article, and through the chair. We license real estate salespeople and insurance salespeople. They have to pass a basic competency test to work in the state, but that doesn't make sure that they're the best either. We then have to use other qualifications to decide if we're going to do business with them, and I think the same thing applies to teachers. This is a basic, basic screening. Regarding the specifics of Representative Dyson's concerns, he wants to manage output rather than input, and I would say I don't want to turn down any tool that we have available to us, and we should also be concerned about managing output, and we have another bill that I hope you will see before too long that does address that. Part of his concern stem from experience that he was aware of that occurred in, I think, three southeastern states, Arkansas, Tennessee, and I believe Virginia. Well, when they established teacher competency tests, they couldn't find anybody that would pass the test that would work for the wages they'd pay. Now, that's, I guess, the possibility when you pay the wages you pay in Arkansas. Looking at the wages we pay teachers in the state of Alaska, I don't think that's a problem. One of Representative Dyson's concerns is if you raise the criteria, then the folks that are in the profession, whether it's teaching or real estate or whatever, they're going to ask for more money. Well, that may be a possibility. I think there's free market forces here that come into play. And we could use the reverse argument and say, well, we'll lower the standards, and then we could hire less competent people, and we wouldn't have to pay as much money. I'm not sure we want to go down that road. So his points are interesting. They're well taken. I don't think they necessarily apply to Alaska. The notion that this bill will not affect the really competent teachers, I think, is correct. I mean, it's not going to have be a problem. However, I think it's important that, one, if there are teachers, and there have been teachers, who are not terribly literate or competent in their specialty area, that they be screened out, because much like kids, the one bad apple taints the public image of the whole group. And at a time when we have the high level of public concern that we're doing the best we can in schools and trying to elevate that confidence, I'd not like to do what we can to ensure again that we have the most competent teacher.
Thanks, and I think I agree with you on what you said. I just want to make sure that we don't send a message to superintendents and administrators that they shouldn't continue to review competency and weed out those who are not doing the job and help those who need help and get them on their corrective path and do all those other things. And I don't want to suggest by this action that somehow, you know, we're alleviating ourselves from that responsibility of doing the other parts of it. But I think perhaps having a hurdle that people pass to at least some level of assurance that the people have achieved some minimum probably is appropriate. I know that I've done that as a professional engineer, and it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, just passing the exam doesn't necessarily make me a competent engineer, but it does indicate that I've, you know, achieved some level, as others who have done the same thing. And I think maybe doing that for the profession of teaching may on balance be a good thing.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond, I appreciate your words, and I agree. I would just like to add that last year there was a tenure reform bill that was passed that I think encourages and even requires school boards, superintendents, principals to do what you'd ask that they do, that they continue to evaluate existing teachers very closely, help those that need help, and those that refuse help and refuse improvement to encourage them to seek employment elsewhere.
Other questions of the bill sponsor? Senator Ward?
I might have, but I'm not really sure. It appears in my package I don't have the second page of the NEA letter. And I don't know whether that would cause questions or not.
We'll get that for you.
No, then I don't.
Anyone else have it?
Sure, yeah.
No. We'll get that for you, Senator Ward.
It's on the back.
It's on the back.
It's, yeah.
I'm trying to suggest that, but I didn't find my copy.
What?
You're saving paper.
Mine's not on the back.
Okay, yeah.
They've saved.
They saved a lot on mine then.
They saved toner on mine.
Well, you just never know, you know?
Smaller and smarter, okay.
Yeah, you'd know about that.
Say, Bundy, if you'd like to swing around, we have, I know at least one person would like to testify. And I don't have the sign-up sheet, but I know Mr. Sear is here, and let's see who else in regard. And I might just for the record mention that we're considering committee substitute for House Bill 145. Let's see, first, Ms. Buell, if you would, please. And it is Buell?
Yes, it is,
yes.
Buell.
Okay, thanks.
For the record, Nancy Buell, Director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support in the Department of Education, which is the division that includes teacher certification. As we have said before in House Hess, the department certainly doesn't oppose this bill or anything else which is designed to raise the quality of our workforce in the state in education, along with Senator Lehman's comments. We also believe that a single test is probably not going to make that kind of difference. There are, in fact, even more than 40 states that have some level of test. By our last count, it's 44 and rising. It seems to be a fairly standard procedure in other states, which over time has not necessarily raised the quality of education in accordance with public concerns and demands. So we believe that the real emphasis ought to be put on the performance standards and upon teachers reaching those performance standards and being prepared to reach them before they ever enter the profession and being evaluated on them in our public schools. So on the one hand, we do support On the other hand, I don't think we should view this as any kind of a panacea. I think that the workforce itself and other states which have tests are examining more and more stringent procedures for assuring teacher quality than this kind of a test would produce. I'd like to direct your attention to the portion of the bill that asks the state board to review nationally recognized tests and make a selection of a test and make a selection of a cutoff score. And to help you understand that that is not a simple process, that it is a process which will require the board to meet to receive expert assistance in establishing a legally defensible cutoff score for whatever test or tests might be selected, and that we are right at the edge. It's unfortunate nationally that we are right at the edge of major new instruments in this area. So to select from existing instruments only without considering that we're on the verge of new instruments being developed in this area would be to go into something which might well be de-adopted by all those other states, if that's even a word, over the next few years. Most of the states in the United States are participating in a program that is a joint effort amongst the accrediting agency for colleges of teacher education, professional associations, the National Board of Teaching Practice, and all of the state directors of teacher education and certification that are involved. I think there are 36 of them, to develop a new assessment for new teachers called INTASC, which stands for initial something or other to assessment of teacher competency. The acronym escapes me. Our profession is full of them, I'm afraid. But at any rate, it's looking at multiple assessments for new teachers, and we are part of that consortium hoping to take advantage of what is developed there. We know lots of other states are planning to move from their existing instruments to that when it is developed. It'll include a test of teaching knowledge. It'll include a demonstration of ability to teach in both performance assessment and the provision of a portfolio. And that definitely is the direction in which all of these states which have this initial test are going. So we would not want to adopt something that everyone else had just decided was no longer appropriate. And that makes it really important that the board have the time and the support and the expertise necessary to select a test that really will help Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Buell. Questions? Seeing none. Thank you for being here this morning. Mr. Sear? Morning.
Good morning, Senator Wilkin. Members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify. This is one of those rare occasions when the department and the House majority and NEA are all singing on the same page, and I think it speaks well for all of us that we are all concerned with doing what we can to improve the quality of education in Alaska. I really have very little to add to the testimony. We are pleased to support the bill. We think that it will improve instruction and will improve education. We think it's just a piece of the puzzle, just a small piece, but that if it does screen out applicants at some level, even if it's only a few, that is important, and that it does give the public confidence, more confidence at least, in the initial applicant that applies and walks in through the school door on day one. We do agree that it is up at that point to the building principal and the administration and the school board for those people who are not performing to do the evaluation and provide the plan of improvement and work to make education better. So, I mean, I don't know what else I could add other than we do support this, we are in favor, and we do thank Representative Bundy and this committee for considering it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions? Comments?
Not now that I got the second page.
That's sincerely yours, part.
That's right. What I wanted to read. Yours forever.
Well, the Alliance hasn't gone unnoticed, and I thought before the meeting is over, we probably ought to get a picture. So.
Well, let's not get.
Anything else on House Bill 145? Thank you, Mr. Sear. Seeing nothing else, it would be the intention of the chair to pass this to its next committee of referral. What would be the wishes of the committees? Senator Lehman?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report CS for House Bill 145 from the House Committee with the accompanying, I hope, zero fiscal note. With the accompanying fiscal note, gag, and individual recommendations.
Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill, Committee Substitute for House Bill 145 passes to its next committee of referral. Thank you, Representative Bundy.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I would just, if I might, just add to the fiscal note that there will be a setup charge, but after the test is set up, then the applicants would be expected to pay the cost, and it would be program receipts, so it should be then zero in the outline years.
Thank you. Let's see. The committee will stand at ease just for a moment. We're back to order here, and we'd like to bring back to the table Senate Bill 96, having to do with the regulation of hospice care. We took testimony on this Monday, and Senator Ward asked that we hold it for further consideration. We're not going to take testimony today, but we do have, as listen only, Mr. Correa is online in Kenai. So, Senator Ward, please.
Yes, thank you very much for holding this so that an amendment could be worked out with the people from Kenai, and at their request, I'm now moving amendment number one to Senate Bill 96.
Is there objection to the amendment?
I'll object.
Objection. Let's see, we need to vote. Okay. Call the roll, please, Chris.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Green?
No.
Senator Ward?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Senator Wilkins?
Yes. What did we just do?
We accepted the amendment.
Oh, no, we didn't want to do that. Oh, I thought we were just going to decide whether we could put it. Oh, I was thinking of something else. I move for reconsideration. I was thinking we just had to get it on the table, then we were going to talk about it.
Yeah. Is this the way you want me to teach the Mason Manual?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Do
we want to go through the process of reconsideration, or is there anyone that would like to change their vote? Yes, I would.
this is the point,
legal?
Mr. Chairman. No, it's not, but if you...
I want to vote no on the amendment.
I gathered that. It's not quite how you do it, but...
Well, we can bring it back Friday.
Let's do it. No, that's fine. I'll tell you what. Why don't we...
Let's
erase
back
the roll
up
and start over.
I appreciate that. And let's back up. And I was thinking...
Backup's not exactly the term, though. Kenai, I hope you're listening.
Senator Ward, you'd like to propose an amendment, and the amendment is on the table with no objection. Is that correct? Now we're going to have discussion.
I have objected.
You objection to putting it on the table.
I don't object to putting it on the table. I just object to the amendment.
It's moved it.
For purposes of discussion.
Now we have discussion. Now we have discussion, and under discussion, I call for the question. Roll.
Okay.
All right, so it's on the table now for discussion.
And I've called for the question.
Okay, now it's time
to vote.
It is moved
for its adoption.
Okay, thank you. All right, now let's see. No other discussion. Chris, please call the roll.
Senator Green?
No.
Senator Ward?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
No.
Senator Wilkins?
No.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Okay, the motion, the amendment fails 2-3. Thank you for your
diehard.
Thank you, Senator Ward, and thank you, the committee, for your indulgence. Okay, that takes care of Senate Bill 96. So Senate Bill 96 is in front of us, and the chair would entertain a motion to pass it to its next committee of referral. Senator Lehman?
Mr. Chairman, move that the Hess Committee report Senate Bill 96 with individual recommendations, and I don't know if my packet is totally in order. Did we have any fiscal notes attached? An accompanying fiscal note with individual recommendations.
Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, Senate Bill 96 passes out. It passed to its next committee of referral. Thank you. Okay. Now let's go to... Let's go to Senate Bill 146. Figure out where we are here on this. Let's see. I would like to... do I need to pass the gavel to somebody to give a sponsor statement?
Your vice chairman.
Okay. I'd like to pass the gavel to the vice chair, Senator Lehman. And before you is Senate Bill 146. This is, and I will, what I'd like to do is just give a brief statement and then flip through the book. Over on the table, I think everyone has it, is the packet, and with the packet is also the bill. So those that don't have it in the room or table, please avail yourself of that.
Senator Wilton, chair recognizes you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Senator Lee. So with that, we will present the bill. I don't intend to take testimony. I would ask the chairman not to take testimony today. And
it's not the chairman's intention to take testimony outside of the sponsor's
time.
Thank you for backing up. Okay. Let's see. We'll go through the. I'd like to just go through this briefly.
Smaller but smarter.
Most folks have been through this before, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. Senate Bill 146 is a result of Senate Bill 36 and then the 3 days of testimony that we've taken about 3 weeks ago. And I'm offering Senate Bill 146 as an alternative to Senate Bill 36. Just like to flip through the packet, if I could, a little bit of clarification. The front cover, I think, is important in that, to me, it represents the four pieces of the pie of public school funding. And anything, each piece of this packet relates back to the pie, so it's helpful to me to have that pie in front of us as we talk about the components of public school funding. In the sponsor statement, I'd commend that to your reading when you'd have the time to do it. And I would just make one comment on page 2 of the packet, page 1 of the sponsor statement. I ran across a saying I thought was appropriate, so I've incorporated it. A couple weeks ago in Time magazine, I was reading, and Bill Demmer said, long-term solutions create short-term difficulties. And that I thought that was very appropriate for what we're trying to do with the school foundation formula. The sponsor statement, I won't go through that. It just sort of sets the stage. There's a map in here, and up on the wall is also a map that talks about how our state is organized in school districts. And that's an interesting map to me, and I had to do a lot of learning to grasp that. I'd leave you with one thought, and that is 14% of our students are in 70% of our school districts. There's something in that statement that doesn't jive. So I would just leave you with that thought. Perhaps that's what I see as one of the problems in our current foundation. Page 6 is the definition of the four pieces of the pie and the components of the pieces of the pie. One particular thing that's rather interesting, if you look at definitions on page 6, the adjusted ADM I've come to find is a cumulative multiplication factor of the size, the area cost differential, and the single site. That's an interesting way to calculate size factors, and I would just suggest that that's a generous definition of how to calculate in size, ACD, and single site. The rest of that is just applies to the pie, and it's just there for reference. As a separate is the bill, a committee substitute for 146. There's a bill analysis that I won't go through today. It's there to reference back to the bill, of course. Most of that is repealer, but about a quarter of it is explanation. I would refer you to the page 25, which is assessed ADM, which is really the heart of the Senate Bill 146, and I would refer you to page 26. Page 26 is simply a graphic indication of the disparity of the wealth between our boroughs, or at least the difference between the wealth of our boroughs and our state. And you'll notice that Anchorage is about $13.2 billion in 1996 full assessed value, and that ranges down to St. Mary's, who is about $4.4 million. So indeed, we have very disparate wealth in our community. Page 27 takes that assessed value and applies it to per student, because the crux of 146 is that if you have the ability in your government to pay for your educational needs, you do so, and we're trying to bring everything to this per student level. What that shows is the North Slope Borough has the capacity of about $6.8 million per student to fund their educational needs. The average down in the right corner in true student ADM, actual headcount, the average is about $400,000 a year. And it goes from left to right in increasing amounts. And that's simply a division of the student ADM into the assessed 1996 value. I might say that the assessed value is a value that I find relevant in that it's determined by the free market, that it is it rises and falls on the overall wealth of the state, and it's an indication of each school district, each indication of each government of their ability to create wealth, or their inability for that matter. It's a key argument of Senate Bill 146. We take that to page 28, and we bring in the adjusted ADM, and that tends to narrow the numbers. And that is that shows then that the North Slope Borough is still at about $2.6 million per student after doing all the size and site adjustments, and the average falls to about $300,000. So those are tables that are key to the argument. I might say if you look at the pie, the 3 o'clock part of the pie, which is required local, that bears a little explanation. There's an or there, and the or is whether you're organized or unorganized or unorganized. If you're organized, the formula asks for 3 mills of your assessed value or 100% of your local requirement. So in this case, every government in Alaska will pay 3 mills of their assessed value, with the exception of one, and that is the North Slope Borough, which will be asked to pay about 1.8 mills of their assessed value. So they're indeed being asked to, at least on an assessed value, being asked to pay less than the rest of the people in the state. The REA, as you all know, there's a tax component in here, a gross wage tax. That's addressed on page 29, 30, 31. All the numbers are run with a 3% to gross payroll tax. It's collected quarterly through the Department of Revenue and is remitted along with the normal ESD requirements that every business in the state has a requirement to report. And it's exactly the same numbers that would be the source of that 3% calculation. And indeed, it could be in the same envelope. That section is simply how that was arrived at. Page 31 shows, which is a table, shows the amount of wealth in 1995 and gross wages that were created in the REAAs, and it's about $475 million. And I think that's an interesting table to refer to. Moving on, there is transition because this, in the transition section, there is transition money available that in the first year, so that essentially the 1997 numbers apply to 1998, and that those school districts that are affected negatively are shown on page 33 in transition funding as on a declining scale to the year 2002, which is the fifth year of the plan. At zero, so we're fully into the new funding, into the new public school formula by the year 2002. Equalization, assessment normalization. 3 weeks ago, we had testimony to the fact that if we did the education component without the 9 o'clock piece of the pie here, we indeed were hurting programs and kids. And I think the committee took that testimony as being valid. And we've added a component, which is the blue component, the 9 o'clock component, which is assessment equalization. And I won't go into all the how that's calculated, but I would just say that you have to assume some amount to equalize. And essentially, what this does is takes money from the districts that have the ability to create more wealth and brings it back to those communities that have the inability to create wealth. The money is put into a pot. I guess the best way to do it is graphically. If there was a big pot on the table, all of the school districts would dump money into that pot based on their pro rata share of the assessed value of the state. So Anchorage is about 42% of the assessed value of the state. They would contribute 42% of the 3 mills, which is 42% of 90 million. That's on page 37. You take the money out based on headcount. Anchorage has 31% of the adjusted ADM in the state. So while they put in 42% of the money, they bring out 31%. So if your adjusted ADM and your assessed percent is the same, then you're equally a donor as well as you get as much as you give. If your assessed value is greater than the students you need to educate, then you're a net donor. If your assessed value is less than the number of students you need to educate, you gain in the formula. And I just might note North Slope is not included in that because they're already paying for their educational needs. So that's the 9 o'clock component that is new that hasn't been seen before. Summary tables, page 39, 40, 41, and 42. It helped me when folks have a chance to take 40 and 41 and lay it like this. In column 5 and 6, which is combined state support, abuts up against assessed value. This is simply a way to go completely from the start to the end of the new formula to see the effect. So I will just commend that to you to study, and each school district there is listed. Page 42, given some assumptions, which talks about the state support with the 3 mills, normalization per ADM. This table assumes, as all these tables assume, that there's be 1.5% student growth in the next 5 years for each year. It assumes a 3% wage tax that generates about $15 million out of the REAAs and assumes a 3 mil normalization. So those the ADMs increase and decrease according to different factors, and almost every school district on there has a different story behind it. You'll see some school districts increase, some school districts decrease. Those that decrease, I would suggest that they look at three areas to see why they decreased. The first is that I would look to see how their categorical funding today compares with the categorical funding in the new formula. And that relates to the 20% that's now that today is it varies throughout the state. In the new formula is a flat 20%. I would suggest that they look at the number of sites that they have in their districts and how that relates to the front loading, the two units of front loading, where the greater the sites in your district, the more front loading you have. The new formula doesn't have a component of front loading as the old one does. And then the third thing I would look at is the value of the individual school district as it relates to the value of other school districts. I think in those three, at least those three components is a reason why you go up or why you go down. That's it. Two things. If you'll turn to page 38, which is the effects of the normalization. That shows the effects of the 9 o'clock component to the pie, and as you slide out on 3 mils, you the greater comes out of the more wealthy communities and goes into the less wealthy communities. The higher that mill rate, the more that's in the pot to be divvied up. And that's a political call that all we can do is suggest, and someone else will have to decide where that sliding scale fits, where it starts and stops. But that is a variable that's assessed at, or that is calculated at the very end of the formula. If you want to know the difference between today's funding and the new formula's funding, that is on page 35 and 36. That shows without normalization, with normalization. And I would commend that to you to lay those pages side by side. That shows comparisons between today, existing formula, and the proposed formula. I think, and that's that is Senate Bill 146. I'd be more happy to answer questions of the committee.
Do we have any questions of the bill sponsor?
Is the bill sponsor about to make a motion to move it out?
No,
we're at questions.
Questions.
Senator Ward, you have a question? Okay. Any questions, committee members? Senator Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, I know that we're conceiving of a formula that no longer, and because of the PL 874 money is being discounted, unlike we did in the past, that the disparity test is not a compelling thing anymore in terms of the formula, but is there a way to calculate from your charts what the greatest potential disparity between a per capita distribution to a student in a given school district would be between the poorest and the richest school districts under your plan? I'm just trying to think if this new way of calculating things provides for more or less disparity potentially than the way we used to do it. And I'm not advocating for counting the PL 874 and, you know, being between 23% and 25% to pass a disparity test, but is there a way to assess that, the old formula versus this proposal, in terms of potential disparity?
I don't know. Let us work on that. Well, I understand what you're
That's
trying to get at.
Worth knowing.
And would you measure that on ADM or adjusted ADM?
I'd have to think about that as well. Yeah. That's just something that we ought to know mm-hmm. as we move through this.
That's a good question.
In terms of,
I'll find that fairness. Out. Yeah, that's a good question.
Further comments or questions from committee members? Sir Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, I know we're not taking public testimony on this proposal, but undoubtedly you worked with various folks in preparing this, and maybe got some reactions from some of the professional organizations that are following this very closely. Could you, since we're not taking public testimony on this new proposal, can you characterize that for us? Or?
I'm a little biased, so I would characterize Senate Bill 146 as carrying with it cautious optimism that it perhaps has within it a new foundation formula. That it's a place to start, and I'm pretty confident in the fact that we can work some of the problems. Today's the first day that the effects of the four pieces of the pie have been brought out, and so I expect to hear, and I hope to hear from those people that are concerned about how it affects their particular schools. I think that the formula, as it's put forth, no longer glosses over the problems that perhaps we have structurally in our state on how we fund education, how we ask for funding, and then how we fund it. So I would hope that those problems surface and that we address those problems in some manner, but that we don't try to cover up the problems by simply throwing money at it. So I'm sure Sheila would agree that over the last month we have had some excellent pro and con discussion, both in the office and in different groups that we've attended on this concept. So I would go back to say that while there's some concerns, I have a sense that there's a fairly good basis of support for what we're trying to do.
Mr. Chairman, this is a question that occurred to me since the other chairman gave me a preview of his proposal yesterday, and I appreciated that time he spent with me. And that is about whether a real consensus has been formed about this, and whether there's been consideration given to the other bill that passed out of the committee. I guess it was Senator Helfrich's bill about the school debt reimbursement. If in preparing this proposal, if you considered the full impact of legislation that's made it out of the committee, if we pass this out and we passed out Senator Helfrich's bill, there's a sort of a cumulative effect of the school debt proposal in terms of distribution of resources around the state or bonded indebtedness. And the benefit of that to local communities, and then of this funding proposal. I just wonder if you factored that in to, since the committee passed it on and recommended it pass in the law, if you factored that into the operational funding formula that you're proposing.
Senator Wilkin? No, we haven't considered Senate Bill 11 in this at all. And Senate Bill 11 now is in Senate Finance, and they're talking about it yesterday, and I understand the percentage is back down to 50%. And but that's not a function of this. I would only hope that these types of efforts that we try to address some of the discomfort that we have with the current foundation can only make people feel better and a little perhaps looser with the purse strings to build schools, not only in the urban areas, but the rural areas too.
And yesterday when we got together, I asked you if you were willing to consider the request of the Board of Regents for some consideration of remedial education or developmental education through the school foundation formula or some other funding source. And that's not included here, and I just wanted to put that on the record that I would hope the committee would think about that proposal or the issues raised by it. As when we continue our work, because it's not here, they've asked us to address it, and I hope we would talk about it at some future point.
I would certainly agree.
There's not an easy way to graft that onto your proposal, so I'm not going to try and
that's true, and I think that
mess things up in that way. But
that's true, and I think we're all concerned about those comments we hear from the university that they get people that need remedial education before they can begin their college career. And while that is not addressed in here, I think all of us that have sat and listened to that testimony at least twice are concerned about it, and we will work on those things.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkin?
I just want to, there are some pieces that need to fill in here, and I would, while I appreciate the committee listening to me today, I would hope that we wouldn't hold this bill, and we've got a few more things to do. I would try to get it back to the committee and certainly in the next few days to try to move it on to Senate Finance, but I would ask that we hold it today.
Excuse me for the interruption. This is the Slamis site. We would like to know if we can testify on Bill, the Senate Bill 146.
The intent today is to take public testimony on it, but the Hess Committee is going to hold the bill over, and I believe
we're still accepting written testimony.
Accepting written testimony on Senate Bill 146. Are there further questions of Senator Wilkin? I will then relinquish control to the chairman.
All right, thank you. All right, let's see. That's Senate Bill 146. Is there anything else we need to do today? Anything else needs to come before the committee? Senator Ellis?
How are we coming with, I don't know if it's subcommittee work or full committee work on the sex offender registration bill? Could I ask you to check into that? We'd hate to be the committee known as
holding that up.
Holding it up.
We will have a report on Friday.
Are we the committee known as that?
I don't know. I'd hate to be known as that.
Senator Ellis, we'll have a report on Friday. Okay. Anything else for the committee?